everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I'm telling you, we are in for... Washington Post just posted a piece online saying Tucson and Phoenix are in for historic heat wave. They were talking about not only duration, but temperatures. Phoenix looking at maybe 122.
Have they ever seen 120 or above?
Yes,
in
they
Phoenix?
Have. A couple of years ago, I think Phoenix saw 122. But anyway, it's...
Well, you know, this is going to be, what, 2 weeks in a row
yeah.
with successive
yes.
days of excessive
yeah.
heat?
So we're looking
warning?
At, yep.
That's got to be some kind of a record.
It does. We're looking at an historic heat wave. Anyway, we are in the relatively cool, air-conditioned studio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's Friday, the 7th day of July, 2023. The radio station 1030 KVOI, the voice for Tucson's trusted news and talk. We're now at the 12-and-a-half-year mark with the radio show in our 35th year on TV and radio in Tucson. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone calls, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Big shout out to some of our media friends, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group. Their portfolio includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. My co-guest host, Tim Steller, is back with us. Always a pleasure to have Tim. 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association Columnist of the Year. How are you today, Tim?
Good. Pretty warm.
Yeah, it's very warm indeed. Yeah. And we welcome back our Friday Focus interview. We try to bring in the chief. My goal is every quarter, and I think we're pretty much on track with that. Tucson's police chief, Chad Kazmar. Chad, chief, how are you?
Good. Good to see both you gentlemen.
Okay. Always a pleasure, chief. We're at the mid-year point. This would be a good time for you to give us kind of the big picture. Where are we now as far as crime stats in the city of Tucson?
Crime stats, yes. Something I focus on continuously. You know, we're trending in some areas in good directions, almost 19% down on violent crime, Part 1 crime compared to last year. We're down 12% compared to a five-year average. Again, with violent crime, Part 1 property crime is down 9.5% on both on a year-to-date and a five-year average, so I'm pleased with those. Still seeing way too many non-fatal gun incidents. We're at 778 year-to-date. It just continues to reinforce short fuses and folks not resolving conflict with words, but with violence.
This heat isn't going to help things.
It does not help people remain calm, cool, and collected, that's for sure.
No.
So we've had 54 non-fatal shootings and 20 fatal shootings with a total of 23 homicide victims. So again, those numbers, data is data, so it ebbs and flows, and some weeks are tougher. Last month was hard on us. We had a lot of violent crime last month, and then things can slow and they average. But I'll tell you, it's a lot of work to do. It's I'm pleased with seeing things going in the right directions in those two spaces, but there's lots of work to be done and still more ground to be gained, and we're going to continue working on that.
Officer involved shootings?
We're a little higher. We're at 6 this year, which is we average 8 a year. Again, we go through the beginning of the year was really busy. Then we didn't have any. We had a individual in crisis. Last week that resulted in a deployment of both non-lethal and lethal use of force. So the individual did not sustain injuries and was taken into custody. But so it's been busy. Let's talk about traffic. Everybody's always interested in traffic. We're still higher on traffic fatalities, and I'd like us to see 43 year to date. This year they've changed a little bit, less pedestrians this year. So we've seen an uptick in motorcycle. If you ride a motorcycle, please, 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 green doesn't mean go, it means look left and right. One of the things I've been monitoring with the legislative change about motorcycles being able to ride between lanes of traffic when traffic is stopped.
That legal?
It is legal now.
Wow.
Vehicles have to be stopped for that to occur. But one thing I worry about with our red light runners is that people just aren't paying attention, and then we have our motorcyclists who just go because it's green and they don't look left and right. So as an avid cyclist in town and motorcyclist myself, If you're on a motorcycle, it's a great way to get around town, but you know, you got to be really careful when you're covering those intersections. I'd encourage you to go to training. Pima College has a great program, lots of great training programs out there, but make sure you're getting those safety courses.
Traffic enforcement. Do you have cops on the street now looking for violations?
We do. This year, year to date, we're over 15,000 both civil and criminal citations we've issued, with an additional 5,000 verbal and written, so a total of 20,000 different contacts. We're out there. That's not the solution, but it is a contributing, you know, behavior that we're going to be out there educating, contacting, slowing people down, you know, getting them to look left and right through those intersections.
And before I give it over to you, Tim, I just wanted to follow up on the officer-involved shootings. And when there is such a thing, and there are, it's part of the business, right, Chief?
Unfortunately.
There is a group, a regional group that looks into these incidents.
Yeah, we're year two into the Pima Regional Critical Incident Team. Every law enforcement organization in the state will have to do something like this in the near future per state Arizona revised statutes and direction from the legislature. So we're ahead of the game. Again, kudos to Sheriff Nanos and Chief Riley from Oro Valley that were the brainchilds of saying, hey, let's get ahead of this. So I did inherit this, and we've talked about this with your listenership before. When I came back as chief and was absolutely on board with it. But the idea, so everybody understands, is that agencies no longer conduct their own criminal officer-involved investigation when an officer deploys lethal force. There'll be, you know, primarily a larger agency like TPD or the Pima County Sheriff's Department, the case that we have one, with a smaller secondary investigative agency. And then the home agency retains the ability to do their administrative investigation that normally is one step behind that criminal.
All right, here's Tim Steller, the star.
Chief, I wonder if you could just clarify a couple of things you just mentioned. I got confused when you were talking about shootings. You referenced, if I'm not mistaken, 54 non-fatal shootings and 20 fatal shootings. Is that really? I know we have more than 20 murders. So is that really the number of fatal shootings?
Yeah, so great question, Tim. So what that means is, let's break down non-fatal. So I said 778 year-to-date gun crime. That means everything from homicides, from somebody shooting a gun and no one struck, to shooting a sign, to shooting, you know, a human being. So that's the breakdown of that. So we've had 54 non-fatal. That means somebody was hit by gunfire, but it wasn't fatal. And then 20 fatal shootings with 23 homicide victims. So that means more than one person at one incident can be a victim of homicide.
So if I'm not mistaken, there have been more than 30 homicides so far this year in Tucson, based on just following your press releases. So that means a bunch of them were not shootings, I guess.
Yeah, you know, so for example, fentanyl overdose now. So if we come across somebody who's overdosed on fentanyl, part of that investigation is trying to find out who sold them those drugs.
Oh.
And if we can go back through that investigation and identify, we're actually working with the county attorney to prosecute the individuals for homicide that sold those drugs. We've unfortunately had two cases where minors were able to get into drugs, and there were deaths related to those things. So all those numbers add up.
So in looking through the murders that you all have reported via press releases, one of the trends I've noticed, and it's not a new one, is a lot of perpetrators and victims in that 15 to 20-year-old age range. I have not counted, but it struck me that it was somewhere between a third and a half. Let's say it's a third of the cases this year. Am I perceiving that right? And what's going on there?
Is the question, are more men involved?
It's all males, I think.
Young males.
Yeah, 15 to 20-year-old males is what I'm talking about.
The age is shocking. Younger and younger and younger. I'm talking 12, 13, 14-year-old individuals that are involved with violent crime and gun crime and homicide and robbery. I mean, really shocking. So yes, your answer is yes to that. It's a statistic that hasn't really changed. One thing we have seen an uptick on this year, over a third of the homicides have some type of drug nexus, whether it was folks who were using narcotics, folks who were selling or exchanging narcotics. And so that's been a trend we've been paying attention to. You know, I think a lot of your, you know, the next question might be, is this a safe place? And how do you avoid being a victim of a violent crime? Well, You don't sell drugs, and you don't go buy drugs from somebody you don't know. Substance, you know, use is a huge issue here in Tucson. I think you see it with our unsheltered population. But there are other things that you can do. Vehicle driving. Don't engage somebody in a road rage situation. We had more of those incidents last year than we've had issues this year, but they do happen, that spontaneous violence. I would encourage you not to, you know, if you're out at 2 o'clock in the morning, you should be working or you should be home sleeping, you know. So there are risky behaviors that increase the odds or the probability that you're out there and you have an interaction with somebody who's armed and a violent encounter could ensue.
All right, let's try to get some of these questions. Tim Steller asked on Facebook, Tim pointing out he would be with us today at noon. Let's see if we can go through this. We've got James wants to know about staffing. What's the pay level? Are we getting the officers we need? Who are we competing with? What's the overview on that, Chief?
Yeah, thanks to Mayor and Council, we just actually got an additional raise. This actually that hit this week. So sergeants and below received a $5 an hour, or I'm sorry, 5% pay raise, not $5 an hour, 5%. It is Friday, thankfully.
Yeah.
3% for everybody else in the organization, both professional staff and the higher levels of upper management. Great strides for city leadership that's trying to remain in local market financially competitive. It's a tough market because most mid to large size police departments in this country are short staffed, and they're short staffed for a variety of reasons. And one of them is it's hard to retain folks the last 5 years, and it's hard to recruit folks in the last 5 years with just the narrative around law enforcement and public safety in general. So we have been working through that. I'm really happy to report you don't hire your way out of that kind of situation. You have to retain your way out of that situation. So we peaked, we average about 5 year average for losing officers is 6 a month. Through attrition. We've peaked at 9. We're about 2.75 holding strong this year. So if we can continue to retain the staff what we have while aggressively recruiting and compensation is part of, you know, being an aggressive in a hiring market that's tough to hire in.
So when you say those numbers, you're talking about attrition per month, that is number of officers
yes,
leaving
just
per
commission.
Month? Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Just commission.
Okay. Wow. How is that affecting especially response time and responsiveness, that is selectiveness in responses?
So our total commission staffing right now, and again, it's I try not to talk, just our total staffing is 1,142 team members. Our numbers include folks in training. So we have just over 800 commission folks, just over 115 CSOs. I keep floating a model of 900, 300. I think that's a reasonable goal for us to be shooting for as an organization, as a city and a community. Our community service officers, we continue to scale those. We're building conservative 30 to 50 of those a year. I'd like to see those increases because there's so many calls for service that a police officer doesn't need to respond to. So we're talking about how do we get less officers to more of the high profile calls? Well, you have to divvy that work up and you put the right work in the right hands. And that's why we're scaling those community service officers.
Do some of those officers want to go into the police, become an officer,
absolutely,
a sworn officer?
Yeah. So it's a great grow your own program. That's what we
call
it.
And you can get in at 18?
Start at 18. You can be the breadwinner in your house and make more than the median income here in Tucson with a high school diploma.
But to be a sworn officer, the age limit is
21.
So there is the difference there.
Right. And we're also advertising right now for another new position that we're modeling after watching Phoenix PD, which is called a professional staff investigator. That job is open right now. You can go to jointucsonpd.org. And the really cool part about that job is it's an associate's degree with 2 years of investigative experience. So if you were in loss prevention, you worked for DES, or you worked for an insurance carrier or provider, and you have some of that investigative experience, I encourage you to check it out. It's basically what you see on TV, a plainclothes professional staff detective. And the only things, you know, you won't be required to do is put handcuffs on somebody or call in a search warrant. But just about everything else can be done. So this is another way for us to augment that commission staff and do two things. One, the goal is to increase service delivery. One of those things is reducing the wait time, but also the amount of cases that we can investigate. And the other thing that does is it balances the workload, which is a part of a healthy retention plan as well.
Do we have a good CSI unit at Tucson Police?
Professional staff investigator. Yeah. CSI Miami. You know,
yeah.
I wish we could solve things.
People see this
as
on
fast
TV
as they
and
do
they think, and they wonder, yeah, what about our own hometown? What are we doing here with that?
If you've never been to our crime lab, you'd be surprised. We do have TV level scientists that work for us in our crime lab.
And this position, professional staff investigator, this person could come from what profession. Maybe they're working, listening right now. Yeah, they thinking,
could,
hey,
again, they could be loss prevention at any of our big box stores. They could be working for DES. They could, there's a gajillion different types of investigative positions that could be, you know, you work for a large human resources department. Some of our staff will inevitably, you know, and this is a healthy career path model too, mm-hmm. for some of our CSOs might put in for those positions as well. Yeah, so it's just another, you know, it's another angle that mayor and council have supported the creation of this position and the funding for those positions. And I think what we're seeing, it's definitely easier to find our professional staff team members than folks who want to be commissioned officers right
All
now.
All right, we are up against a break, but I've got a quick question before the break about shoplifting. So many of our merchants are just so frustrated with the grab and run, Chief Kazmar.
They are. And so that is a focus area. We have units called, we call Zebra units. And one of their full-time jobs, they work in all the different four patrol divisions, and they work with the big box stores and the Pima County Attorney to actually identify our prolific shoplifters. Those are folks who are out there shoplifting every day. Most of them are supporting a drug habit, but if, you know, we
but
don't.
They go to work.
They go to work to steal.
Put and, work and in quotes. Yeah, this is a daily thing for these people.
Yes, and those are the folks that we're really trying to target. They're causing the most harm in the community, and so we have teams that go out and identify those folks and try to apprehend those. And those are felony level cases that then we work to prosecute. And you know, obviously we hope to leverage folks to get treatment and help and fight the addiction that they have.
All right, let's take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Tim Steller is here from the Star. Chief Kazmar has another segment with us coming up. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. He's here for his quarterly visit, the police chief, City of Tucson, Chad Kazmar. And Tim Steller is back with us, award-winning Tucson, Arizona Daily Star columnist. Good thing I didn't say Tucson citizen. That went away a long time ago. Tucson Star. Good thing I didn't go that way. Yeah. But anyway, Tim, it's always great to have you back. What do you have for the chief to kick things off for Seg 2?
Yeah, I just wanted to dig a little deeper into this question of response times. You were mentioning when we were off air about priority one. I mean, first of all, maybe you could describe the priority categories. But the question I got from someone online here was essentially priority. She's talking about a case where a man jumps into the back of her yard, starts undressing and doing sexual things to himself, and call is made, and it takes more. And she said that was a priority two call, and it takes a long time for anyone to get there, more than an hour, and she's armed and pointing at him. I don't know about pointing a gun at him. She's armed. Anyway, so that's just an example. I guess the question I'm trying to get at, though, is like priority responses, because it sounds to me like you guys are responding still fast to the really bad stuff, and then the less bad it is, the longer it takes, and it may take a long time. Am I summarizing correctly?
Yeah, I think that's it's fair. So we have basically four tiers: priority one, two, three, and four. What you described would be a two. Mm-hmm. If that individual then tried to start gaining entry into an occupied structure, that'd be a one. There's one of the things that we talked about off air is, you know, what are the call response times? Well, there's no national standard that says you should, you know,
for a city the size of Tucson,
you should do X, yeah, right? And there's been some legislative discussion about that this last cycle that didn't go anywhere. But last year we were averaging 12 minutes on priority ones. Priority ones, there's a couple things that go into that. Staffing is part of that. How many resources you have out at any given time to manage the level of calls. One of the things that's unique about the policing industry is we do have averages and we have general good, modeling guidelines of when calls are going to come in, but we certainly have outlier times for no rhyme or reason while significantly more calls come in. And we have this challenge in fire, and we have this challenge with emergency communication. So we do staff per trends, but it doesn't mean in situations like this that was reported to you, Tim, that you might have an outlier case, and they're all average. So when we talk about, we've gotten our priority one time down to 826 average, that means you're going to have some where we go there within 60 seconds, and you might have some that unfortunately wait there for a longer period of time.
Depending on maybe where the car or where the officer is, right?
Right. Well, it depends on, it not only depends on the resources you have, but what else is going on at that exact moment in time. So if you're working a brand new traffic fatality and a robbery comes out, the call that Tim described is going to be third in queue. So then what has to happen from a emergency communication standpoint is we start doing field management, because we have four different patrol divisions that are frankly the size of most mid-sized, large-sized police departments. So what we have the ability to do is to pull units from another geographical area of town if that's the most, you know, feasible thing to do to get someone there to that type of call. But that does tie back into the ideas as one, we peel 1,000 calls off a month within the 911 system right now at the Public Safety Communications Department of folks in crisis that don't need a police officer or a firefighter out there. That helps those priority one responses, right? When we're putting that work in a clinician's hands where there's no immediate harm for that individual, right? That's the right resource. The same thing goes for, there's some things that can be taken over the phone. We're working on a 311 system where non-emergent calls and things that come up. So you'd be surprised the types of calls that we get in the 911 center. Like, you know, how do I drop a bill off in the mail, or I have a bird in my house. We do get those types of calls. So it's all those little things add up to. And then there's, you know, efficient management of the resources out in the field, which is a first line supervisor's responsibility to make sure if we only need two officers at a call, only two officers are going to that call. And the officers are great too, of knowing that, you know, they're the ones at the everyday tip of the spear, have to go out there, and trust me, they know you're disappointed with the call response time, and they're the ones that have to go and mediate that every day that they go to work. And Matt, just think about that for a minute. Imagine going to work, you know, not having exactly the amount of resources that you'd like to have, and you have to explain to a constituent why it took us longer to get there. So they do a beautiful job of mitigating that and helping the community understand that we're working on, you know, grow in the field resources and the commission resources and our professional staff team members.
Look at 911 and Sharon McDonough, the work Sharon's done over there, and you're very familiar with the 911 center. A year ago, it was a different story. It's almost like night and day, isn't it?
They have done great strides. Sharon and her number two, Mike Garcia, the Sharon and Mike have done a great job of really, and the collective team there, of continuing great momentum. They're at an all-time high staffing level. They're doing some really cool things down there that we have Austin, Seattle, all sorts of folks that are coming to Tucson to evaluate some of the things that they're doing in there.
Sorting out calls is a big priority.
Everybody's, right? Mental health calls are a challenge for, again, it goes back to the country change post-COVID, and the world's just a tougher place to live in, and we're seeing more mental health issues across this country, not just here in Tucson or in our state. And so I think we can continue to work with Arizona Complete Health and scale those mental health calls. I could see double that amount of calls, over 2,000 calls a month, one day, being peeled off of that system before it goes out into the field.
All right, Tim Steller.
You have this, I think it's still called a homeless protocol, where you also prioritize there the types of camps and the types of situations. Has that been successful in resolving problems, or is it just moving them around, or how is that working?
Yeah, I think I'm obviously a fan as a chief, where that responsibility almost solely fell on the police department 2-3 years ago. And so to see the city scale alternative response resources, and obviously homeless is a big part of that. It's a visible thing that we see. It's a hard thing to quantify, even though we do a count every year. I suspect that count's conservative. And what also, the important part of having a new team that focuses on homeless, the homeless situation that we have here in town, and not just the police department, although we still do have resources that focus on that full time at the PD, is fentanyl. Fentanyl is an absolute driver of a lot of the homeless population issues that we're seeing. In my 23 years of doing this, I've never seen a drug have an impact on the country like I have seen with fentanyl. Because of our proximity to the border, it's cheap. It's significantly cheaper here in Tucson and the state than it is in other parts of the country. So it's accessible. It's, twice as addictive as some of the other street drugs. Most folks are polydrug users, which means most of them are using fentanyl and methamphetamine. But when we find someone, they tend to have fentanyl on them. They don't tend to have methamphetamine. And what that means is fentanyl is cheap, so they can afford to have a few extra pills. When they have the methamphetamine, it's still expensive, and they still use it. So, so that's the visible thing that you see when you're driving around town. The camp, the tiers, are allowing us to prioritize. If everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. And so it's a way for the community to report in, to send pictures, and it gets it in queue. And then really the only camps that the police departments get involved in are those tier three camps where there's risk of injury or active drug use.
And tier one and tier two, what are they?
They're just lower. It's lower level. It depends on, and I'll guide you to the website so you folks can go in if you're having a problem in a neighborhood, in a business area, where you can guide. But it just depends on a tier one is going to be a camp that's been abandoned, essentially. So there's still trash there. Nobody's been there in a few days, but you definitely want it cleaned up so it doesn't draw additional folks coming back. Tier two would be an occupied camp, but there's no risk of fire. They're not, they're not creating a problem, but it's certainly folks that need to be invested in some resources. They're having a hard time. Tier three is, suspected criminal activity that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have a sense of whether we are kind of putting a cap on the problem, or just shifting it around, or solving certain number of people's homelessness situation?
I don't think this country has a solution for the unsheltered population. I think you can look to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco. I think I get to travel a fair amount in my job. I think it is a problem here, but we are doing much better than most major cities. You're not seeing us in the news with litigation like you are with Phoenix. There are rules and laws, and there's conflict on both sides on how we should treat and resolve folks who are in crisis and have substance misuse disorders or mental health disorders. It's not illegal, to have mental health challenges. And so it gets really complicated. I think the city and the city leadership it's not just city leadership. When I say city leadership, it's a metropolitan effort here of Pima County and the city of Tucson working together and trying to identify solutions. And like I like to use analogies, a sick patient, a medical problem. When you go to a doctor and you have a clear medical problem, let's say cancer, and you have to be treated for that. You don't walk out of that visit with a foolproof plan. You come up with a plan of that the professionals say, hey, this is the best treatment plan moving forward, and you treat the patient, and then you evaluate how that treatment's working. I think there has to be a carrot and a stick, for another simple analogy. We have to invest resources, which we are, through Housing First and our homeless outreach protocols. But at the same time, the police department's out there enforcing the law and making sure that, you know, you can't be trespassing. Tim, you asked me about medians as well. Medians are complicated because there's constitutional right to be in spaces and to panhandle. But you have to do it in a safe way where it's not impacting the flow of traffic. And so that can be complicated too. The best thing that we offer is for folks and businesses that are having issues with a high level of shoplifting or homeless, is you contact us and we can help you put a trespass letter on file. That gives us then the ability to go and enforce the trespassing rule. And then we have an area restriction process where we can say, you know, due to the ongoing behavior of an individual, we're going to area restrict them so they can't be in this area. And that gives the officers another tool for folks who, a small amount of people who are creating the biggest problems for our community.
How about domestic violence? How big a deal is that in this community?
It's a huge problem, Bill. It's a huge problem. And you know, that's another thing. How are we doing? We're about as good as everybody else. But we have a high level of poverty in this town, much higher than the rest of the country. And so when you have poverty and people are under pressure, you're going to have more conflict. You're going to have more domestic violence.
What does the law say about when an officer arrives at the scene and there's a domestic violence going on, an incident? So does somebody have to go to jail?
The state law does require, if we develop probable cause for somebody, that is the one of the few very cases that we don't have a lot of autonomy to make individual decisions, and the law is pretty clear on what has to happen there. I'm a big believer in a lot of the problems that we have is youth engagement. And that the problem with that is that's not a simple, fast, quick solution. But, you know, we have to start reprogramming, you know, young human beings who are watching the parents in an environment of domestic violence to teach them that that's not okay and that's not normal, and you break that cycle. Mental health disorder stuff, substance misuse disorders. If we don't start addressing these things where folks are more malleable and influenceable, and I think education is a great place to do that, then we're going to continue to have all the same problems that we're looking at right now in our community.
Tim Steller.
Yeah, so going back to the teens, I mean, what is it that makes them more, I mean, obviously this is not a new thing that teens get into trouble and stuff like that, but the new thing is getting into killings and that kind of thing. And that's even not new for the last couple of years, but like, is there anything we can do? Are we intervening with them? Are we stopping things and not, preventing them from happening? So if you could just explore that further.
I mean, a lot of things that's there. Another, if we had the solutions, we'd all be writing a book and doing online stuff from Tahiti or Maui. But I think the world has changed with COVID. I think the world's changed with social media platforms. And people just feel safer to say and do things that I think the general population would find unacceptable or inappropriate. And it's a little bit of a, we're desensitized to being shocked with inappropriate human behavior. So how do you get a hold of that? I think at a young age, I think when you start talking to young men, again, you said it earlier, and in our community, it tends to be youth or young men and young men of color who are going to be, who have higher risk of being the victims and suspects of violent crime. And that's a community problem. You know, that how do we tackle that? And we talk about that in the community at a divisional level every day. You know, how do we engage? You know, whether we're at a, you know, Boys and Girls Club or a Goodwill Rec event, and when we're engaging youth, is really, really guiding these kids towards programs where they can see the future is whatever they make of it, not necessarily what they're in the midst of at the moment. And so that's a community issue. It's not just a city of Tucson, a Pima County, or a police department issue, but continued youth engagement, I think, is a solution to a lot of the challenges we face.
The economically challenged areas of our community, are they traditionally higher in crime, and do you try to put more resources into those areas, Chief?
You know what's unique about Tucson, and my comments are as a Tucsonan and a police leader who's I've worked in every geographical area of the city through my career. We don't have, like a lot of major cities have a poor part of town. Mm-hmm. These are the projects, or this is where poverty is really bad.
Across the track.
Tucson isn't like that. You know, there's perceptions of that, but really, you know, we have poverty throughout our entire city. And so it's something that the electeds, I think, you know, in the business community continue to work on, our education, 17 different school districts in this area work on, but it's everywhere. And so that makes it more difficult to address too, because you don't know if the, you know, the person in the adjacent apartment or townhouse or house to you, how they're doing financially. And you know, you'd think in this great resignation area, anybody who wanted to work could work and find a job, right? But
yeah,
brick and mortar's changing, online's changing, the hybrid workload's changing. We were talking yesterday, we're challenged right now in the city with mechanics to keep our trash trucks up and running. And it's not just the city, it's the private industry as well.
I never would have thought of
having
that.
Heavy equipment.
A shortage of these people that maintain these products.
Huh? Well, if you think about that, a lot of schools went away with auto shop.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, there's consequences downrange. And a lot of kids, you know, I made the question the other day of, you know, at our city leadership, how many of our kids can go out and work on a car, change spark plugs or change brakes? And I think there were two hands out of 30 people. And so that's a challenge. I think we're going to have the same challenge with, you know, different industries, framers to build houses, mechanics to work on cars. And so these are things we have to start thinking about, you know, to have a well-rounded city.
And the infrastructure, your vehicles, how does the fleet look and the whole overview there?
Man, it's a great question. I mean, we've got a hardworking fleet team that keeps our Crown Victorias still running. And we have to keep Crown Victorias running because Ford's not producing enough SUVs, nor is Chevy. Those are
your
two
premier. I wonder how many miles some of those cars have.
Some of them are well over the mileage that we'd like to see. But we've had 60 patrol vehicles on order for a year and a half from different vendors and not been able to get those.
So, oh, wow.
It's not for lack of trying or funding from the city. It's just it's a really crazy supply chain right now in this country.
Mm. But generally, the city, the voters, pass that issue to put more money into the police department's infrastructure.
Prop 101 was life-saving for public safety and really had a massive impact. And then the Truth and Taxation funds have been, which is another $15 million in the absence of the 101 when that sunsetted, that we have for the three public safety teams. And that's paying for a lot of the capital improvement needs right now, vehicles, you know, our required equipment to go out there and do the job. So we definitely are appreciative of the voter support on that.
Chief Kazmar, thanks for coming in. We'll look forward to your visit. I think we've got something set up already for October. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Stay cool, Tucson.
All right. Tim Steller will join me. We'll have a few comments about, I want to ask Tim about that recent column that he has about the ward-only elections. That's coming up right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to the police chief, Chad Kazmaier, for his quarterly visit with us. Tim Steller sticks around from the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, the effort to kind of change the way the city of Tucson holds its elections, there was this fundraising signature campaign to get it on the ballot to change the way things are. But does it look like they're going to get 14,000 ballot signatures?
Yeah, I think they got well over the minimum number of signatures.
If it's 14, I say you need 20,000 signatures.
Yeah, that's probably the case. Yeah. And they did not get that. I don't know the precise number they got, but they got somewhere over the minimum, but probably not enough of a cushion to make it onto the ballot, which is not surprising. And it's at least, I think, the third time that someone's tried to put something like this on the ballot and failed to get enough signatures. Three times in our history, it has gotten on the ballot and failed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a supporter of this concept of ward-only elections simply because I don't think the voters of any given ward should be overruled in choosing their representative. Mm-hmm. There are arguments the other way that say, you know, you are to elect people citywide because most of the issues the council deals with are citywide. I think it's a valid point, but I just fundamentally can't stand the idea that the ward residents, ward voters can't pick their own.
Would be overruled.
Yeah, they could be overruled. Yeah. Anyway, you know, I'm probably in the minority, this goes on. This will never, you know, stop simmering, this issue, but it never, you know, seems to get resolved either.
One of our lawmakers, a local lawmaker, is the object of a recall.
Yeah, Senator Justine Wadsack is the subject
State
of
Senator,
a recall.
Yeah.
Yes, correct, of a recall effort. She represents Legislative District 17 and is in her first term. And, you know, it wasn't long into her term when people started rumbling about a recall. So they're in the middle of that now, collecting signatures, and they need to get around 30,000, which is a lot. It's hard to recall somebody. Wadsack is, you know, not at all, I would say she has, if you follow her on social media, you'll see that she is quite active and responds to and seems to get distracted by the recall effort. That doesn't mean it's going to succeed, but she's been lashing out at the various people
who lead it
and that kind of thing, which is too bad. But we'll see. If they still have till September, I think.
Mid-September.
No, September 5th,
early
I think.
September.
Yeah,
okay.
To collect those. So truth be told, it is a... It's doable. It's just that it takes a lot, and it usually fails when people try to do this. But you know, they have quite a bit of energy, even if the numbers in the district aren't that favorable.
Mm-hmm. Andres Cano has resigned officially. He's going back to the Harvard Business School state representative. There are seven candidates. The local group will pick a representative or a couple representatives to present to the Board of Supervisors either next week or the week after, 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, so
who are the seven?
What happens is people throw in their names to the Democratic Party organization in Cano's legislative district, which is Legislative District 20. The ones that, as of yesterday, had done this are Emma Alvarez, Wesley Crew, Andrew Curley, Lourdes Escalante, Sammy Hamed, Akani Oyegbola, and Betty Villegas.
Hmm.
It's also possible to nominate people from the floor. Anyway, they'll be meeting tomorrow morning, and it's the LD20 precinct committeemen and leaders of the Democratic Party. So it's not an open.
Do they
meeting.
Put forth one name or two?
Then what happens is they have probably a series of votes to come up with three names to give to the county board, and then the board selects from the three.
And then whoever is appointed by the board will have to stand for election on their own in 2024.
Yeah. So there's an interesting twist here, which is that that's true, mm-hmm. and. Unless they don't want to. Now, when Richard Elias died, Betty Villegas, the same one
That's
who put
right.
her name in here, put her name in to replace him, but said that she would be
a placeholder,
that she would stand in until someone could be elected. And Adelita Grijalva was later elected. And you know, she didn't run for election. Betty Villegas did not run for election. This time, I talked to her yesterday, and she said that if she is selected, then she does plan to run for election. And I would not be surprised to see her be the one to be selected. The others look qualified to me, actually. It's mm-hmm. a decent slate. But, you know, she's the best known and probably has the most name recognition and experience.
Sunday, you're writing about a development in town.
Yeah, Quail Canyon is a really interesting development.
Real quickly, where is it?
Rudisill and Oracle. It's up by the, there's a few hotels there, La Posada. There's a Chevron on the corner. Anyway, it's a little golf course down below the rest of the homes, and it's a big fight over the rezoning of that to put 300 housing units on the property. The board is scheduled to board of supervisors is scheduled to consider it on Tuesday.
What's the issue? The density?
Yeah, just specifically density.
In my backyard type thing.
Yeah, I mean, they say it's not strictly NIMBY because they are okay with some development. They just think that there's too many people going into too little space to be handled on the roads. Rudisill especially is a question. It's a two-lane road there. And also they're concerned about flooding and other issues with the wash. Pima Wash runs through there, and it's a low area. So, you know, in a very, very big flood, who knows what could happen there.
All right, Tim Steller, we will look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star, your column on Sunday. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, and presented by Dan Gibson. That's coming up right after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
And it is time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And I can confidently say, I always like to say, 10 degrees cooler in Silver City. Well, you got it. 94 degrees right now over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Usually it's at least 10. It can be 15 degrees cooler easily than Tucson. So, and by the way, there are no excessive heat warnings right now over in Silver City. Check out southwestnewmexico.org. That's their fine website. Before you head out the door and take the three-hour drive east of Tucson, at the website, so many activities are articulated, great places to stay and great places to dine as well. Time for Weekend Watch. Today we have Dan Gibson on board with us, trying to stay cool like everybody else. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. And you?
Doing well. So what do you have for our listeners that would be something perhaps in air conditioning at least?
Oh, well, this first one isn't. But it's at night. That counts, right?
Okay.
Tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. to midnight, there's a tropical pig roast at the downtown Clifton.
Wow.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, why not? The tickets are only available until, like, I think, like, midnight tonight. So if you want to do it, get into it now. They're actually offering two different tiers of tickets still. One, you get the pig roast and unlimited cocktails. Although, I mean, there's always a limit. But nonetheless, there probably should be. And then, or you can just have the cocktails. And then there's all these local bars doing little pop-up bars in some of the rooms. And those are air-conditioned, so that counts. Barrio Brewing, Danny's Barbecuery, Portal Cocktail, Sidecar, Owl's Club, stuff like that. And you can get tickets at the Downtown Clifton's website, which is probably downtownclifton.com, I think. Something like that.
Well, if you wear
it, you'll get there.
If you wear your Hawaiian shirt, you'll be ready. It sounds like kind of a luau
you
to me.
Pork. You'll get extra pork. I think that's what happens. I can't guarantee it, but I'll look into it first.
Yes.
That's a Buckmaster special.
I can smell it now, that pig roasting. All right. What else?
Well, Tucson Treasure Tap and Bottle is celebrating their 10th anniversary this Saturday. That's tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., cleverly enough called Tap Turns 10. Tap and Bottle, absolutely one of my favorite places in Tucson. I cannot believe that it is 10 years old, because what does that say about me and the passage of time? But they have stuff happening all day long. DJs, cupcakes, toasts, mariachis, surf bands, exclusive beers, exclusive merchandise, all that stuff. Free to get in and just to celebrate the staffers and what they've done for Tucson beer culture.
Where are they located?
And that's the main Tap and Bottle, the one on 6th. I should make that point.
Okay, I'll take a third one if you've got it.
I do. Speaking of drinking, they have a whole new exhibit at the at the Arizona Historical Society. It is their newest exhibit at the Arizona History Museum, 949 East 2nd Street, called Drinking Local, A Toast to the Southwest. They're open Tuesday through Saturday, seemingly between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. That feels a little narrow, but I don't know. And it's a celebration of the history of brewing, distilling, and winemaking in southern Arizona. They actually have the bar from Tombstone's historic Birdcage Theater, the original copper still from Mosquito Bock, artifacts from Gordon Dutt, who was the pioneer soil scientist at the University of Arizona, who led to the founding of the Sonoyta wineries. Open to the public. If you haven't been to the Arizona History Museum in a bit on 2nd Street by the U of A, it's a good time. Lots of interesting stuff. The Historical Society does a great job.
Thanks, Dan Gibson. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Always my pleasure.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to my engineer-producer, Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. I say be well, everybody. Stay safe, try to stay cool, and have a lovely weekend.